But I didn't come here tonight to pander to you about Israel. That's what politicians do. All talk, no action, believe me. The Palestinians must come to the table knowing that the bond between the United States and Israel is absolutely, totally unbreakable. They must come to the table willing to accept that Israel is a Jewish state and it will forever exist as a Jewish state.
7:23, hard to argue that that was Trump's best speech of the campaign. Tim O'Brien knows him better than you and I do. Probably knows him better than his family does. Tim O'Brien had unprecedented access when he wrote Trump Nation. How good was the book? So good, Trump sued him over it. And Tim joins us again. Good morning, Mr. O'Brien.
Good morning, Steve.
Nice to talk to you. What was your take on the AIPAC speech? Did you see it?
I listened to it, or I read a transcript of it. I didn't see it live. But I think, you know, it's interesting because it's very typical of Donald Trump's malleable ability to straddle multiple positions on the same issue simultaneously. You know, he's said since the beginning of the campaign that he feels the United States is overexposed militarily overseas, that we spend too much of our federal budget on foreign aid, that we need to essentially disengage abroad. But then when he's in front of a pro-Israel group in Washington, he affirmatively says we'll engage in whatever way necessary to support Israel in the Middle East. And he really can't have it both ways. We're either engaged in the Middle East or we're not. And when he has, you know, AIPAC in front of him, he'll speak about deep engagement. But in the weeks prior, everything he said has been about disengaging overseas.
Yeah, you remember the old Woody Allen movie Zelig, where would turn into whatever he needed to turn into in the room to be comfortable?
Yes.
He's like a loud, obnoxious version of Zelig. You know, every time I see him, I think, well, okay, then here's what he's going to say now, because this is what he needs to say. It's going to be interesting to see how he follows up his talk of abandoning NATO and you know, essentially becoming an isolationist country, which was a large part of the AIPAC speech and comments leading up to it, based on what happened in Brussels this morning.
Well, the other interesting thing is how wildly ill-informed he is. You know, he gave it's online now. He met with the Washington Post editorial board yesterday, and they published the whole transcript last night online. And he's talking about this issue of assistance overseas, and he rails against how the United States is getting ripped off by the countries we provide funding to and the countries we back militarily. And in the middle of this interview with the editorial board, he said we spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year overseas. And that's just factually incorrect. I think our overseas spending is around $30 to $40 billion, and about a third of that is military assistance.
Uh-huh.
And the editorial board says to him, hundreds of billions? And he goes, well, billions. And the fact is, he doesn't know what the number is.
It's really stunning. I mean, it's stunning. You know, John Oliver this week on his HBO show, which is pretty terrific, by the way. John Oliver showed a series of video clips about the wall and the cost of the wall. And in the video clips, he began with it'll cost $10 billion. Unless you know what you're doing, you can get it done for $4 billion. And in the next three clips, the price went from $8 to $10 to $12 billion. In fact, we know it'll be 2 to 6 times that. But again, it's what you started out with, the essential premise here, and what you know from all the time you spent with him. He'll say what he needs to say when he needs to say it.
I think, you know, and I think he's learned over the years that he can get away with it. One of the things we've seen in this campaign so far is that he can repeatedly lie in the same week multiple times about different subjects, and he does it with such volume and rapidity that by the time the media is caught up with fact-checking the last thing he said that was wrong or false, that there's 10 new things to fact check, and no one can keep up with him. And it's really an unprecedented spree of misinformation in a national political campaign. I mean, we know that people on both sides of the aisle have historically misrepresented themselves or their opponents' records, but Donald Trump brings a sort of a grand mal operatic and crazy man sensibility to all of this. It's very, you know, it's very unprecedented.
Yeah, and the thing that really saves him again and again and again is force of character. Because if you're lying to me, Tim, and I know you're lying, and I challenge you on the lying, but you get in my face over the fact that I challenged you, too many times the human response to that would be, because I'm a decent person, I would just say, okay, well, I'm not getting into this argument. And the media tends to do that as well. They'll take two or three swings at him, and then they'll back down.
Well, one of the interesting things, though, is that people don't follow up with him on the fact pattern. You know, regardless of where any of us are ideologically or what parties we're in, there's a fact pattern surrounding Donald Trump that the media and his political opponents haven't really zeroed in on. I think a great example of this was during the debates at one point when Jeb Bush was still in the race, and he accused Trump of being, which is true, a serial bankruptcy artist. You know, he had four corporate bankruptcies. And Jeb Bush brings this up, and Trump's response is, well, those bankruptcies were good for me. I was using the laws. I did something that every business person in the United States does, and there was nothing wrong with that, and it was a smart thing to do, and I benefited from it. And Bush let it go at that. And what he should have followed up on was, while those bankruptcies might have been good for you, they weren't good for your investors, they weren't good for your employees, they weren't good for Atlantic City, they weren't good for the pensioners that had bonds in your companies. There were a lot of people who were hurt by those bankruptcies. And I think part of what we've seen with him is that I think in the early days, people didn't follow up with him on these things because they saw him as a carnival act last summer. Then he got traction, and people challenged him, but challenged him in an ill-informed way. And I think now, finally, you've got people really starting to hold him accountable for the facts.
You know, if you go with the thought that the far right and the far left are locked in, they're going to vote who they're going to vote for, the vast middle that still is not engaged in this thing or is trying hard not to be will catch up on this stuff as they catch up. We're a headline-reading culture. What's the effect of all of this going to be? And is it the field is so bad that Trump, even as a lion scheming Donald Trump, is still appealing to a lot of people in the middle?
I don't know if he's appealing to people in the middle. I just don't know at the end of the day if that's who his base is. I think he's got a base of people, you know, primarily blue-collar white males who are understandably angry and afraid about the trajectory of the economy. And I think he plays into those fears in the worst sort of ways, you know, with anti-immigrant sentiment, with build a wall sentiment, with the world's out to get us sentiment. And rather than take on those needs and fears in a more constructive way, which, as we've done historically as a country, is to try to deliver good public services to people and have the private sector create jobs. And he's really not in a position to offer those sort of solutions because he hasn't bothered to try to study any of them.
Where's the best place to keep up with you these days, Tim O'Brien?
I'm at the executive editor of Bloomberg U and Bloomberg Gadfly, their political commentary and business sites.
And follow you on social anywhere, or is that good enough
for
now?
I'm at Tim O'Brien on Twitter, Steve.
Spell O'Brien so people know.
O-B-R-I-E-N.
It's great stuff as always. I hope we can talk again.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
I appreciate it. Tim O'Brien, great source on Donald Trump and a very reasonable source on Trump.